Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. I'm Eric Olson. It is time once again for America's Most Haunted. We have an extra special super duper amazemo show for you this evening. I'm not sure if we're going to hear from Teresa, the world famous haunted housewife, or not. I know she's down in Florida on a family vacation. She was really going to try hard to check in. I think they went to Disney World today, so man, you know how that goes. So we may or may not hear from her. But in the meantime, holy cow, I am so excited. I have never spoken before with Ghost Hunters veteran Steve Gonsalves. I love saying that, as we were just discussing. And Steve is TAP's technology manager and lead evidence analyst. And let's be honest, with Grant Wilson retired from the show, Steve is also de facto second in command after founder Jason Hawes. Gonsalves has been a public speaker and educator about paranormal phenomena for more than 10 years, is co-founder of TAP's publication Paramagazine, and trains all TAP's members and use and maintenance of the team's bewildering array of high-tech ghost hunting equipment. And of course, Ghost Hunters, the great Ghost Hunters, the venerable Ghost Hunters returns for the second half of Season 9, which is really pretty astonishing if you think about it. Season 9, and that's tomorrow night, June 12th at 9 Eastern and Pacific, with brand new investigations. And the first one will be The Ghost Hasn't Left the Building, down in Shreveport Municipal Memorial Auditorium. God, that was a lot of syllables. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good to talk to you guys and get on the air.
The pleasure is all mine, and we're really excited to have you here. Even if Teresa is in absentia, she may be joining us at some point. We'll keep an eye for it. And maybe if you're up for it down the line here toward the end of the show, maybe we can take a call or two. We typically don't, but we do when we have mega stars who are who are amenable to such things. So tell us a little about, pretty much everyone who's listening, I'm sure, knows who you are. I love always getting into kind of the background stories, the foundation myths of how everyone got involved in this strange, bizarre, and interesting way of life. But tell us a little bit first, why don't you, about the season coming up. And sounds like a great episode that we're kicking off with tomorrow.
Yeah, this Season 9 has been a pretty special season for us. Most of us never thought, this show would make it into Season 9. You know, luckily we've always had a strong, viewer audience, and we've done, very, quite well in the ratings. But, most shows don't make it to a Season 9, so for us to be at this point, we're all pretty excited about it, and I think that really translates, over into these new episodes. We have quite a lot of energy, really trying to get to the bottom of things. And one thing we see a lot in these newer cases that hasn't quite been such a driving force in our, previous cases have been, a little bit of mystery, not mystery in the sense of, mystery novels, that sort of thing. But, every haunted place has a story, has, elements of things that they're not sure of, missing pieces in history, missing pieces in the storyline. And we really try to piece that together for a lot of these places. And it's really cool for us when we go to a place and they tell us, this happened here, this happened there, and we're able to do, some historical research and really dig and help them figure out what exactly happened. And we do a lot of that in this season, and it's really cool.
Well, I love that you're kicking off with the, really is famous in music history and in rock music history, not just rock, of course, country too, but the Shreveport Municipal Memorial Auditorium. How does anyone ever say that quickly? My God, that's a lot going on there. But, you know, I mean, that's where Elvis played his first pro gig way back in 1954. And are we thinking that perhaps he in his afterlife situation is somehow connected with the place?
I mean, I'm not sure if it's specifically, you know, Elvis. Even the theater themselves, you know, they're not 100% sure, you know, who's still poking around in that theater. But I can tell you, we did catch some amazing things. It would be a little premature of me to, you know, tell you who we may have talked to. I, you know, don't want to give away too much, but great, great evidence from this case. And historically, it's such a cool place. And it's really remarkable. Anybody in that area, you know, just get to that theater if you can. It really is. And everybody that works there is absolutely in love with the place. And they actually gave us some gifts. It was really nice. When they were remodeling the building, they had some of the old rigging and stuff, and they made a nice little shadow box of some of the old artifacts, you know, one for Jason, one for myself, and they handed that over to us. And it was kind of touching, you know. They put a lot of work into that, and it was really, really nice. And the history of that place, I can't say it enough, is absolutely amazing. And we were hearing things, seeing things, and really just, I mean, I think it's a great kickoff to the end of season 9.
Excellent. And how many episodes now is the second half?
The second half, I believe, is six or eight. To be honest, I don't know how many, how they cut it up. I don't know how many they're going to air. I think it's 16 total. So I think it's six left, yeah. I'm pretty sure it is six or eight.
Cool.
I should probably know.
I'm actually looking at a list right now. I guess I think it is six. I think you're right. It looks like it goes through to July 17th. So anything else sticking out in your mind upcoming for the season? Anything new, different, unusual? Of course, we have Amy back. How exciting is that?
Yeah, actually, to have Amy back is awesome. I mean, we're speaking, you know, retrospectively, she's been back for quite some time now. This is just airing, but
right.
When she was gone,
this
there really
was.
This is
in the TV world.
Yeah, exactly. But there was a piece missing. You know, you could really feel it. Her vibe, her energy. I would keep, you know, going to pick up the walkie-talkie to, you know, radio over to her, and I'd be like, dang, she's not here. Amy, where's Amy Bruni? Like, come on. Obviously, she was gone for a good reason, but it's sad. You know, it was a sad time to not have her around.
Well, I imagine it was especially hard because, you know, you had such a major disruption, obviously, with Grant leaving. So, I mean, that was two really big holes at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Grant, when Grant left, it was pretty shocking, you know, for most of us, and really sad. You know, I've known Grant for almost 20 years, and we've been on such a roller coaster together, you know, the last 10 years. To know that he wasn't going to be a part of it anymore was, you know, kind of heart-wrenching. It was pretty sad. And, you know, one thing that sort of makes us be able to swallow it a little easier is, you know, it was his decision. You know, he wanted to leave. He wanted to, you know, turn the page in his life and get to the next part. And if it was something else where, you know, there was some bad blood or you know, God forbid, he, you know, left because of contractual issues or because, you know, whatever, I think it would have been a much different scenario for us all. But the fact that he wanted to leave and it was his doing made it a little easier for us to sort of go, okay, you know, this is just the way it has to be now.
Well, it seems like he just had some other priorities to work on, and obviously, you know better than anyone, when you're doing the kind of show you're doing with all the traveling and the you know, the weird hours and everything. I mean, that is not conducive to family life, I would not imagine.
No, absolutely not. And you know, Grant said, I don't, to be honest, know the exact, you know, extent of, you know, his decision, but he made a few comments to me, one being that, you know, it's just really hard for me to look my kids in the eyes and say, Daddy won't be home for 2 weeks, you know, and I can definitely understand that. I get sad looking at my cats when I'm leaving. You know, imagine if they're your children. Of course, you're going to be, you know, gutted. It would be horrible. But you know, he did it for 9 years, and you know, the best in the field. He really is. So we still obviously talk to him, and still, you know, I hope to catch his band pretty soon next time they're playing, you know, around Rhode Island or something. But yeah, he's still a part of the field, and still we talk to him. And we have an event or two coming up together this month. Next month, and I'm really excited to see him. I haven't seen him in probably 2 or 3 months.
I did see something about that. Tell us about that, please.
To be honest, I forget where it is. I'm pretty sure it's Scarefest.
But Grant will be there.
Please. Okay. Yeah, Grant will be there. I'll be there. Tango will be there. And it'll be the first time we've seen Grant in quite some time. But, yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. He's one of the funniest people I've ever come across. There's not a minute that goes by that we weren't just laughing hysterically the whole time. His sense of humor is just second to none. And he's so fast and quick-witted with his humor. Like, before you can even laugh at the joke, you're trying to figure out how he's quick to even come up with it.
You're laughing retroactively.
That's exactly what happens. I go, how did you think of it? Oh, man, that's actually really funny. Holy cow.
Yeah. You were analyzing it before you had time to laugh at it. Well, speaking of music, I just heard for the first time, I wasn't aware of this, that you're a drummer and you were in some metal bands and whatnot. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. I'm a drummer. Metal bands, been in blues bands, all kinds of different bands. Yep, but I've been a drummer my whole life, ever since I can remember.
Cool. Yep. Do you play now? I mean, are you actively playing in bands now?
No, not with a band. I still play, you know, I got to get in there a couple hours every once in a while and, you know, keep my chops going and keep up with the rudiments and play with the metronome and all that stuff. But I haven't played in an organized fashion in probably 2 or 3 years, unfortunately. I'm a guy that's used to playing, you know, for my whole life, 2 or 3 shows every weekend. Then for the past 8 years or so, I haven't played live once. It's kind of strange.
Well, I would imagine that relates, obviously, to the whole Ghost Hunters regimen. I mean, it really does seem like it's not just, you know, a job. I mean, it really does seem like a way of life.
It is, and, you know, we did a show called The Academy, and
loved it.
I remember,
missed it.
Oh, thank you very much. But there's a part where I'm talking to Christopher, you know, telling him, hey, man, you know, if you become one of our team members, like, this is what happens. You know, we're on the road. I think I was home for 2 weeks the entire year last year, you know. And I remember after that aired, I would get email after email and, like, tweets and the whole thing, people being like, you're such a liar. You expect us to believe you're never home, you're on the road. You guys don't film that. This is all baloney. And I don't think people quite understand what goes into filming these shows. And I mean, I think this year I've been home a total of 6 weeks, you know, the entire year.
Wow.
So
a week a month. You get about a week a month, it sounds like, maybe?
Yeah, probably.
On average.
But it's not even... Yeah, but it's not even in the month. It'll be like we're gone for 3 months straight, and I get to go home for 2 days, and then we're gone for, you know,
right,
a month, then I'm home for 4 days. But, you know, at this point, it's almost like a, you know, an elected torture, you know. But
well, do you like the road? I mean, I would think you'd have to by now.
I do. I like the way we travel, you know, like... A lot of people, like, we'll be sitting with the crew or whatever and kind of compare ourselves to bands or something, you know, in a different city all the time. But the way we travel, you know, we'll set up camp in a place for, you know, 3 to 6 weeks. So we really get to experience, you know, the culture. You know, we're in Pittsburgh for a month. You really get to know, you know, what are good restaurants? What are the pretty cool bars? You know, what are the people like? What's the local culture like? You make friends in the town. You know, every town I go to now in the country, I have friends. You can call people up and say, hey, let's hang out. Let's go get some food. Let's do this. Let's do that. And I'm very fortunate for that aspect of it. You know, that's a really cool thing to know that really anywhere in the country I go, I'm going to have a bunch of friends I can hang out with.
That is wonderful. You're right, because it's a piece of, it feels more like a piece of home, and it doesn't feel quite as much like you're away.
Yeah.
You're where you are, wherever you are, at least with a certain comfort level. And
yeah,
that's great.
We try to make it a little more like home. You know, at Halloween, I always have my hotel room decorated. I put a pumpkin in there, and I get, you know, some, you know, Halloween stuff going on. Tang always, you know, puts Christmas lights in his hotel rooms at Christmas time, and we really try to, you know, bring a little bit of home with us.
Well, I would think
that's
you have to.
You know, so, yeah.
No, not at all. It doesn't matter. Your life is your life, you know. It doesn't really matter how glorious or glamorous that life may appear from the outside. I mean, you know, at the very highest level. I mean, you know, Madonna or Katy Perry touring, they're still just people, and they still, you know, miss home, and they still have people who they care about, and that doesn't mean you're complaining, you know, to simply to recognize that or to admit that, you know, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's very nice.
Sometimes I feel like I'm complaining. I'm like, how can I complain? I live a decently privileged life. You know, a lot of people would enjoy, you know, would want to be here. So we're very fortunate. We're in a very lucky place, but there is quite a bit of travel.
Sure. And I guess either you adjust to that and make the most of it, or it would really grind you down, especially after 9 years. Tell us, how did you get involved with the team in the first place, and which led to the show, right?
Yeah, I was part of, you know, I'll just give you a little bit of a backstory. Always been interested in the paranormal, you know, and I knew the route I was interested in was, you know, how to actually do it, not just the ghost stories and that sort of thing. So where some people would be reading books about ghost stories, you know, even back then, I can remember being 11, 12 years old, you know, reading books, you know, the how to investigate type of books, and really the theory behind it, you know, the energy and what these things could be. And it just kept progressing from there. And when I was 18, I joined a team called the Paranormal Research Foundation. Unfortunately, they disbanded. So around 22 or so, I started my own team called New England Paranormal. And about a year or two into that, I contacted TAPS. You know, they were already a team. And I said, hey, you know, my name's Steve, and this is what I'm doing, and you got a great team. I like the way you guys investigate. And I got a message from Jay Hawes basically just saying, you live too far away, you're in Massachusetts, but, you know, thanks for your inquiry. So I was like, okay. And I just kept, you know, my own team going. And probably about 3 years later, I got a message from Jason saying, hey, I really like your team. You investigate the same way we do. You try to disprove things, and we're both, you know, trying to educate people and help families and that sort of thing. We should maybe join forces. And I said, Jay, don't you remember who I am? Like, I contacted you a few years ago. And he's like, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. But from there, I know. I got kicked first, and then he invited me in. But so around 23 or 24, joined forces with TAPS, and we did a lot of cases, a lot of education. I would train all the TAPS members, and they would come on our cases, and I would go on their cases, and it was a lot of fun. And we did that until I was 28 years old, so about 6 years. Was just investigating with TAPS, and you know, had my own team, and then we did a case. Well, actually, my team, there's a whole network of teams now called the TAPS family.
Right.
And but start of that was when my team, New England Paranormal, joined forces with TAPS. And then it became this idea where Jay and Grant were like, we need to have a whole network around the country of people that investigate, you know, with the same protocols and procedures that we do. And so that sort of started the whole TAPS family, which is now quite grown into a few teams in each state and overseas. But in any case, we Jason, Grant, and the team, they did a case And the New York Times happened to do an article on that particular investigation. And it caught the wind, you know, caught wind of the wire service, you know, the news wire and that sort of thing. And they put it out on all kinds of newspapers. And basically from that point forward, we got a lot of interest from production companies, you know, and TAPS. You know, even before the television show, we were still a bigger team in the scheme of things. We were educating and we were lecturing and we were still, you know, Jason and Grant, they worked on MTV's Fear and they did a lot of things, you know, prior to Ghost Hunters. And but this one New York Times article, we started getting a lot of interest from production companies. And I remember Jason and Grant, you know, basically saying, hey, there's a few different production companies that want to make TV shows about what we're doing. And I remember we were all like, what is what we're doing? This is because we've been sitting around in the dark for 6 hours. You know, how is this going to be a TV show?
It's so visual.
So, yeah, exactly. It was a little, we were kind of like, all right, you know, but Jason and Grant and myself, and, you know, they've always included me luckily in decisions and sort of the process of the team and the workings of the team. And, they'd said no many times, like, no, we're not interested in doing a show, you know. But eventually Pilgrim Films and Television said, look, we're going to make a TV show about this kind of stuff, whether it's you guys or not you guys, we're going to do it. And how do you think these other teams are going to represent the field, you know? And so Jason and Grant and myself and the TAPS team, we said, all right, let's give it a shot. And we went into production, and that was 9 years ago now, so... That's how it all started.
Excellent. I did not know all of the ins and outs behind it. Well, no, not at all. I mean, that's what this is about. It's telling the stories and how did all this happen. Everyone sees the shows. we all have that in common. People love to hear the background stuff. That's absolutely,
yeah.
I mean, that's what it's all about. Now, at what point, because, I mean, we know that it's not like there's a lot of money to be made in ghost hunting. As far as I know, basically, you know, you guys don't charge for your services. And, I mean, I know most teams don't. I've noticed this kind of hybrid developing where, you know, where teams or organizations will teach people and they will take them out, you know, on investigations and instruct them and whatnot. And there's some, you know, fees involved with that. I think that's perfectly legitimate. In fact, me personally, kind of looking from the outside, because I've not been an investigator per se. I mean, I'm really interested in it all, but I've kind of came through the media door. You know, Teresa, my partner on the books, we're writing in America's Most Haunted book and on the brand and the show and whatnot. Now she's the, you know, the real investigator. But anyway, I've never quite understood the indignation that so many people seem to have, you know, just simply with the idea that an investigative team would charge. I mean, my God, you know, time is money. You got to do something. Anyway, that's an aside. But I'm assuming that you had to work, you know, until a certain point in this whole process.
Yeah.
What were you doing, you know, before this could pay for itself?
Yeah, I mean, TAPS, when we were the team, you know, just you know, investigating, we would have meetings, you know, every month we have a meeting, and team members would pay into a little pot, you know, that we'd not dues per se, they weren't required to do it, but every month we'd be like, all right, here's $20, here's $10, and we'd all pitch in as much as we could. And you know, back then, I hate to say it, but there weren't really digital cameras and that sort of thing. So film and film developing, you know, we'd roll through 20 rolls of film in a night and have to get that developed. There's $100 right there. And buying equipment, you know, that's sort of how we kept going, you know, that way. We would just, whatever we could throw in, you know, to buy equipment and that sort of thing. Even season one of the show, you know, I remember... I don't know how much I can really get into it, but I remember they were like, you know, you know, there's no money involved whatsoever, but we can, you know, offer you guys some equipment. You know, is there equipment that you've always wanted to use that maybe we could, you know, let you, you know, have for the show, that sort of thing. So we immediately thought thermal imaging, you know, something we couldn't afford. We immediately bought a full 12-cam DVR system, something that we couldn't really afford, you know. And so that's the season one, sort of how, you know, how they definitely took care of us with, you know, I mean, they paid for our travel, obviously. They're not going to make it come out of pocket. But all of season one and most of season two, I was a police officer. And my dad owned some jewelry stores, and I worked in jewelry as well. And Jason and Graham were plumbers, still are plumbers. And we've had engineers, you know, Donna in the earlier seasons. She was a really, really smart girl, and then she was an environmental engineer. And we had Paula, who was an MIT professor. So everybody still worked, you know. Now we're, you know, fortunate to be in a position where even if we don't make so much money off the actual show, you know, we're hired out for things, lectures and
sure.
appearances and different things. So we're able to, you know, sustain ourselves that way. And we're very fortunate to do so because before that, there was absolutely no such thing as a career in the paranormal. There was just absolutely no such thing. And, you know, we were the first show out of our type for 4 years before another show popped up. So for a while, you know, I was lucky enough to say I'm one of, you know, one of five paid paranormal investigators in the entire country. You know, it was kind of fun to think about that. You know, even now, maybe one of 20 people who can actually make this a full-time career, you know, it's very difficult. But we definitely have never charged for an investigation, and we never will. It's just everybody needs help, whether they can afford it or can't afford it. There's not even a definitive way to quantify any of this. So how can we charge something, you know,
right.
for something that we can't even prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, you know? So we don't charge. We never have. As a matter of fact, most places now might actually benefit from us being there. It's quite the opposite. There's, you know, the St. Augustine Lighthouse has single-handedly been able to stay open because of our
right.
show. Now there are ghost tours and our events there.
Sure.
Fort Mifflin, in the past 4 years, we've raised $50,000 for them, you know, doing events there, and they've been able to keep their doors open. So it's very cool to be a part of that, you know. Cashtown Inn, you know, and was going to close their doors, and luckily our show brought a lot of, you know, traffic through there. Now they're thriving, bed and breakfast. So that's a lot of fun to be a part of that. It makes you feel good to know that, you know, what you're doing, you know, these awesome people who love, like the people at Fort Mifflin, they absolutely love that place. Like you wouldn't believe it's like they just are in love with it. And they would destroy them if they had to close that place, you know. So it's really cool to know that what I've done is you know, has allowed it to stay open and let people tour the place. And now they have, you know, school groups there all the time. And it's just really cool to see that happen.
So it sounds to me like the thing that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but at least one of the things that has changed the most over this time period is there has been this shift or this development, I suppose, of the economic side of it. And while it's still a very small group of people, as you were saying, who can actually make a living from it, there is starting to be a market that's developing. And fascinating that all these places – you know, the places you've named, but then others too. I mean, there's a number of these kind of the super haunts. You know, we're covering a number of those, or several of them in the book, in the America's Most Haunted book. Yeah, I mean, they have become viable economic entities based upon kind of a combination of the ghost hunting, the paranormal tours, kind of combined with the historical tour aspect, and that seems to be an industry that probably has quite a bit of room to grow. And you guys were absolutely in on the ground floor.
Yeah, I mean, I feel a bit narcissistic, I guess, saying it, but I mean, I was in the field before our show, and obviously, I'm in the field after, and. There was nothing, you know, you couldn't tell people what you did without being made fun of and ridiculed. And, you know, and even into our second, third season of the show, people would be like, oh, you're a guy that runs around in the dark. Like, you believe in that crap, you know. But now, you know, paranormal investigators are almost the cool kids. You know, I've seen that shift. And you know, I've read articles, you know, especially in the past, Sony released an article that said because of our show, the electronics, you know, sales have boosted up, you know, 10 or 15% worldwide or whatever. So, you know, you see things like that. And
that's
it's
amazing.
Pretty cool.
Think about it.
Yeah, it is cool. And if you look even now, like, I mean, me being a huge Scooby-Doo fan, you know, the new wave of Scooby-Doo, they're going to places like St. Augustine Lighthouse. You know, I mean, that's in the new Scooby-Doo, yeah. St. Augustine Lighthouse. And it's like, wow, if our show hadn't gone there, would they really even know about it? You know, you just, it's pretty cool to be a part of all of that. And, you know, luckily we were the first ones, you know, in terms, obviously not the first investigators, as people that have done it better than us for way longer, but we're fortunate to be the right place at the right time, where we were the team that were able to break the barriers and bring the paranormal field into pop culture.
So what do you attribute your longevity, not as a team, because you were doing it before, like you said, and I imagine you'll be doing it after, because it's something that fascinates you, and you guys clearly, you know, really, the camaraderie, you can tell. I mean, that's part of the appeal, I think, very much of the show is how well you guys get along and how much interest you have in each other as you are doing these things. But again, I'm kind of putting words in your mouth, but what do you attribute the longevity of the show as a show to? Because my goodness, look at all the other ones, similar ones, not to say derivative, you didn't hear me say that have come and gone. And yet here you guys, you know, plugging away strong as ever. I mean, let's face it, you really kind of only have one competitor, and they're so different that you're kind of the North and the South Pole, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. You know, I think a few things that have been good to us. One, being the first, you know, the first show, and being the first show for many years, you know, for at least 4 years, sort of helped us, you know, grow roots into the field, so that most people, you know, a lot of people that are in the field now, you know, will sort of tell us, you know, like, we didn't even know this existed until we watched your show, you know. So being the first, you know, definitely helped. And I also think just our way of investigating. Before we came on the air, you know, you'd watch shows, and every paranormal group thought that everything was a ghost. They really did. Every little noise, every little anything, they really thought was a ghost. And we were the first team in the public eye anyway that was saying, wait a second. There's a reason why this door is opening and closing, and here it is. You know, there's a reason why these lights are turning on and off, and here it is. There's a reason why you're hearing these sounds. There's a reason why you're, you know, and giving them the real world scenarios as to why it's actually happening. I think it really helped people, you know, grasp onto our show, because a lot of people thought, well, hold on a second, that's what I would do. I would say, wait a second, let's check for the vacuum draft made by the downstairs window that's open, you know, and let's not assume that a ghost blew the door open. And so I think that's what helped, you know, people really take a liking to our show. Is we, for all the people that were non-believers, they kind of looked at us and went, wait a second, these guys are actually, you know, trying to get to the bottom of things. They're really not out there saying that every little thing they come across is a ghost. And,
they would appear to be rational.
Yeah, and I remember in the earlier seasons, like, to even get Jay to say a place was haunted was like pulling teeth, you know? Even nowadays, you know, people, you know, they're like, oh, you guys find so much stuff all the time, this and that. You know, now we're just at a point where we're in a privileged position where we can choose the most haunted places and gain access to all these places. And, you know, if we shoot 50 episodes, you know, Sci-Fi may decide to air the 25 that have all the activity. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But
well, plus
the
time. The time factor. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, but, you know, people do forget. I mean, even I forget. I know. You know, I've been around TV. I've been around reality shows, you know, of various kinds. I mean, I know how much time and effort and how much footage, just plain footage, goes into, you know, every one of those episodes. And you have, you know, days and days of investigation that is boiled down to what, 40 some minutes, 42 minutes, whatever the whatever the total now is these days. I remember it used to be 48, but I think it's less now.
less, more commercials.
Of programming time. And and of course you guys don't even directly control the editing, do you? I mean, it's
not at all, not even for a second. I mean, the production company is very nice to us, where they'll, you know, if we want to see a cut of an episode before it airs, you know, they'll send us a copy of it. Or, you know, if there's something like that we're not too into, we can make suggestions, you know, and they'll listen to us. They're really good about that, you know. But we don't get to have it really much say in terms of what makes it to air or how the show is edited or put together. We sort of see it, you know, after the fact. But then we can make suggestions after. You know, there's been times when I've said to the executive producer, you know, or the director or whatever, like, hey, you know, in this episode it looks a little weird when I did it. You know, maybe this time we can, and then they change it. You know, they're nice that way. But we don't control, you know. One thing we do control 100% is our evidence. You know, we review all of that second for second, and we decide what makes it to the show, what doesn't, you know, what airs and what doesn't, and they put that in the show appropriately. But basically, they just have their cameras and they follow us, and then they make a show out of it. It's pretty cool. You know, it's always interesting to see and be like, you know, oh, they used this, but they didn't use this, and, you know, we spent 3 hours, you know, doing this one thing, and they didn't even use it, you know. And we'll get a lot of mail from people being like, oh, you're in this place for this, you know, and you never used the thermal. What's wrong with you guys? And, you know, you just kind of chuckle and be like, yeah, actually, we did use the thermal quite a bit. You know, they just didn't put it in the episode for whatever reason. So, like you said, you know, we've been at locations for a week straight, you know, investigating every night, and that all gets boiled down to 41 minutes, you know. So they really have to, I mean, they're quite, I mean, I wouldn't be able to do it. They must be geniuses, you know, going through all that footage, trying to figure out how to make the stories work and all that stuff. It's, you know, quite a talent, but they do it. It ends up being pretty cool.
Indeed it does. Yeah, well, I'm guessing over time, you know, as you guys work together, as you said, you have a real good working relationship. I would think that they're, in order to be efficient, they're kind of, they're earmarking as they go, you know. That's at least part of it. I mean, as things are happening in real time, yep, we're going to use that, Let's go back and look at that, Just like you guys are doing with evidence, you know, in other words.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, they have, like, for instance, whenever we're investigating, there's a producer or a director, and they have like a little earpiece. They'll listen to everything that's happening, you know, and then they'll write their notes and, you know, log everything. So when they actually get the footage, they know just about everything that's said and everything that happens. It's all notated for them pretty in depth. But it's still quite an undertaking. It's pretty impressive what they do, actually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're boiling down, what? I guess they have to take out 95%? I mean, is it even 5% that gets used? I suppose, at least if in terms of, I'm sure it's not even 5% of the actual footage, but maybe 5% of the activity or the events. Here's my big question. And I guess it's kind of a two-parter. What for you personally is the single most or group, as the case may be, of just absolutely most compelling or mind-boggling? And I want to say evidence, but it's not only that, because it would certainly could include an experience for which there isn't necessarily any tangible evidence. You know, what is absolutely, what comes back to you when you're thinking about just the things, the thing or things that just you can't explain and that have had the greatest impact on you personally?
For me, it's always, you know, direct responses to things. That really takes me by surprise. To know that there's something there that I can't see that knows what I'm doing and can interact with me is a few things. It's kind of scary, you know, but it's so interesting and so unbelievable, you know, to really grasp it and wrap your head around it. It's really cool when, you know, we ask for a sign and we get it in return, or we ask a question and we hear a direct answer. It's really, really cool. One thing for me in terms of evidence, you know, I like the thermal evidence because as long as you're versed in the thermal camera and you know how to look for heat signatures and what throws off heat and cold and, you know, how your body works, and there's a lot that goes into it. But once you're familiar with all that, the thermal evidence is kind of indisputable. You know, it's really the only evidence that scientists, you know, that we talk to and people, you know, with PhDs that are much smarter than I am and all that stuff, that's the evidence where they kind of go, all right, you know, this is kind of crazy. You know, if I believed in this ghost business, that would be what I would consider, you know, hardcore evidence. And the thermal imaging, I think, is some of the most compelling evidence, you know, because you see it right in front of you. You know there's nothing reflective in front of you. We're moving our own arms, you know, just to be sure it's not us and that thing's not doing what you're doing. But you see this, you know, human shape in the thermal, and it's just really, really cool. We've had quite a good degree, you know, of success with the thermal camera. And I also really like the evidence we can get with the EMF gauge, you know.
Right.
You really need to be familiar with the EMF gauge and energy. You know, there's a lot of investigators that will walk around and be like, oh, I'm getting a 2.0, this is amazing. But they don't really know what it is. You know, you need to really understand energy. You know, you can't just assume that your EMF readings mean things. You know, I'll ask investigators, well, do you really know what your EMF gauge is picking up? But, yeah, of course, it's the electromagnetic field. And it's actually not that at all. It's actually picking up, you know, a little bit of radiation that's left behind by something happening in the electromagnetic field. And most investigators don't know, you know, exactly how it works. You know, that even just your slight bit of movement can create anything. You know, everything is surrounded by static electricity. Once that static electricity moves a little bit, it becomes electromagnetic, you know. So if you sit down, move your arms, you're now displacing that static energy, and now it's moving, so it becomes electromagnetic. So, you know, you can get a lot of false readings, but the true EMF in the controlled environment is phenomenal. Like a one-time Tango and I, we set up a series of EMF gauges in a row, and we asked it to move, you know, across our path, and we saw the EMF gauges systematically rise. You know, the left one rised and dissipated. The middle one rised and dissipated. The next one,
whoa,
you know, rose and dissipated. And that showed us a path of movement and showed us that it was, you know, a free-floating ball of energy, not something that's connected to anything, you know. And that, to me, is really fascinating.
It was sequential. That's what's so cool. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
you can see
yeah,
the...
Right.
You can track the movement. That's neat. So
yeah, that was
so
awesome.
So with all of this evidence, and sure, you know, a lot of it, some of it's much more compelling than others. You know, I mean, it's mm-hmm. yeah, hey, that's interesting. I wonder what that is. But with the volume that you have been exposed to, which is probably more than virtually any other human being who has been exposed yeah. to more of this evidence than you have. You know, a handful of people, I guess, but, you know, John Zaffis, I suppose, you know, a handful.
But John Zaffis, he's experienced things that we you know, on my team are just kind of – John has been somebody I've followed since I was, you know, probably 14 years old.
Amazing guy.
So it's really cool now to be, you know, be at events with him, and we're friends, you know.
Sure, your peers.
This
your
is
peers.
Really cool, yeah. And, yeah. You know, I used to obviously follow his aunt and uncle as well, you know, the Warrens. And,
sure.
It's just really cool to be sort of in their little world now.
It is. It's exciting. And, of course, you know, you have an entire generation that looks up to you now in the same way. What I was going to ask you, though, is kind of the second part of that first part is, so what does all this mean to you? The stuff that you can't explain away through any physical mean, what does it mean to you? What is it? What is the source of that evidence or those experiences that you just really can't explain away through natural, or at least through currently understood natural means?
Yeah. Well, there's a few different areas of that. You know, there's I do believe that there are, you know, spirits that have once been, you know, on Earth in human form, you know, and have passed away or whatever. And they're, you know, we've got direct communications that we've received them, you know, through audio recordings and that sort of thing, where they're answering questions that we ask. You know, they're able to hear us and communicate back and talk about things, you know, not full, you know, conversations, but you'll be able to peek into their life, you know, just a little bit. And, you know, so I do think that is a phenomenon that's happening, but I also do think a lot of it is just energy. You know, there are machines out there that can move objects using energy. You know, it is possible. We know about dark matter, you know, and that's constantly pushing on the electromagnetic field, almost in a combustion type of way. And, you know, that has been known to move objects, you know, just that dark matter, which is just another form of energy pushing on the energy that's in our physical environment, you know, has been able to move objects a little bit, you know, and there's been controlled experiments where they can get objects to levitate and move a little bit just by manipulating the energy around it. So I think some of what we experience is just natural, even though it seems supernatural. I think it might just be natural, but I do believe that there is that other element of, wow, you know, you were somebody that was alive here. Now, is it, you know, the storybook tale of it, where it's somebody who's passed and has moved on to heaven or wherever else and is, you know, consciously deciding to stay here and do things? I'm not sure. That's still, you know, the research that we're doing, and we're trying to recognize patterns and things that we catch to try to answer those questions. But I think there's a few different realms of it. I don't think it's all just, you know, so black and white that there's one blanket answer for it. I think we're dealing with a few different types of phenomena.
What about dark entities? What are your thoughts on that? Are there such things as dark/evil, demonic, whatever term you would care to put on that? Is that something that's real for you?
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I've seen some things, you know, that I can't explain, that, you know, being a man of religion, as soon as I call upon my faith, you know, it stops happening, you know, and it sort of, you know, stops its behavior, and I'm not sure why or how. Whether they're actual demons, I'm not sure, you know. There are people that do claim that. You know, if you talk to Mr. Zaffis, he'll...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah, he'll talk with great conviction about these things, and I have no doubt that, you know, he's encountered some things that I don't want to mess around with, you know, but he has the training and the knowledge to deal with those things, you know, and we don't. So, you know, I try not to meddle in too much with that kind of stuff. Do we know it's demons for sure? I mean, our research doesn't point into that direction. You know, it could just be, who knows, you know, somebody that was a bad person when they were alive and is now still trying to get under people's skin. You know, it could be that demon, just like people say, you know. It could be a whole other type of phenomena that we have no idea about, just dark energy that's running around, you know, being malicious for whatever reason. But it does seem to be out there. It really does. Can we say it's a demon? You know, I don't think so, at least not in my research. But definitely there are things that happen that are not, you know, they're not there to make your day good, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have had on air. I mean, we've seen some physical remnants, and people have been scratched,
yeah,
and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. You know, it would appear to be a negative type thing. Hey, we have had someone waiting on hold literally like 5 minutes into the show. Would you mind taking a quick call?
No, sure, of course.
All right. Area code 321, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm
what
here.
What is your name? Do you have a question for Steve?
I do. Hi, Steve. It's June Marie. How are you?
Hi. Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I wanted to know, have you ever had anything follow you from an investigation to your home?
I have not. Nope. Very fortunate that I haven't. I have talked to some investigators who have claimed it to happen, but I know that nobody in our team has ever had it happen, luckily, you know. But I believe it's possible, you know, if whatever is there has, you know, conscious decision-making skills and has retained its conscious thought, you know, and it may decide to follow you for whatever reason. Or if you take an item that something might have a strong emotional or physical attachment to,
right.
Perhaps it'll follow you. But, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years now, and luckily I've never had anything follow me home.
Oh, that's great. I have one more question, though. What's been the biggest change without Grant?
The biggest change of that grant, we still are all, you know, we're a family, you know, but you can tell that one of the family members is gone. You know, there's a void there, you know, it's more a sad feeling, you know, like I still expect Grant to come around the corner and crack a joke, or I expect to be like in the dark somewhere and hear his voice calling out to me to tell me something. You know, I miss all of that. And, but, you know, on the other hand, he wants us to just investigate and he doesn't want our team to be affected by him leaving, you know. So we try to just continue to investigate. But I think there will always be a void there. You know, he was a big part of TAPS, obviously, and a huge part of the show, obviously. And, you know, what he's done for the field and for people involved in the field has been remarkable. And, you know, I mean, I'm in a fortunate position where I've sort of taken over, you know, a little bit of his duty and have become a right-hand man to Jason. But would I rather him be here and still be a tech, you know, tech department? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I've been with you guys from the beginning, and I love the show. I cried when Grant said he was leaving. But you guys
I did
are so
too.
Awesome. Yeah, I know you guys did. I was crying right there.
I did.
Yeah,
and
I
used
love
it.
That.
I was like, God, they didn't have to use me crying. Those statists. I was hoping maybe they would cut that part out or something, but
no, we know you're a family. Everybody understands.
They weren't shy about expressing the emotional side.
No.
No.
I love you guys. Love to all of you.
Thank you.
Ready for tomorrow night.
Oh, thank you very much. It's going to be quite an episode.
Okay.
Thanks
God
for the
us.
Call.
Thank
for
you.
Holding on so long, too. I'm sorry
oh,
we
welcome.
Neglected
oh, I
you.
Understand. No, I understand.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Bye. Good night.
Bye.
All right. Cool. So what's left? What's left in this field that you've been in for 20 years and you've been on TV for 9+? What's left to achieve? What are your goals? What would you like to accomplish that you haven't?
I would like. I mean, I think myself, you know, and most people, we really do want to know. You know, what is after death? You know, is there a continuation, whether it's here on Earth still or somewhere else? And I would like to get, you know, those answers, or at least get closer. You know, I think we may have a little bit of an idea, but I think we need to do a lot more research. And I don't know if that's something that will get answered in my lifetime, but I hope so. I really do. And, you know, there's places that I would love to investigate that we haven't been able to get to yet. And hopefully, you know, when we go into another season, that we'll be able to get some of these places. You know, it'd be really cool to investigate, say, Disney World. You know, they have some supposed hauntings there. Even the White House. I think there's only been one or two presidents that have claimed not to have any activity happen to them in the White House. So
right,
that would be really
right.
cool.
That
Abraham
wow.
Lincoln supposedly is poking around that place.
that, talk about iconic places. And think, how funny is it that you thought of those kind of connected to each other, you know? That just shows you what a place that you know, Disneyland or World, just Disney in general, I guess, has in our culture, that, you know, that we would just kind of naturally equate it with the White House. That's funny.
I know. Well, they do have the Hall of Presidents at Disney World, so there's a little bit of a connection, I guess.
Well, I'm from Southern California, so, you know, we used to go every year, sometimes twice a year when I was a kid, to Disneyland, and, you know, it was just amazing. I mean, I just never really got over it. And, yeah, the first time I saw the presidents with Lincoln speaking, the animatronic, oh, my God, that was just, how can this be? You know, I mean, that was back in the 60s. You know, when that came out, and the Haunted Mansion, you know, that's way back then too. That's still my favorite, of course.
Oh, the Haunted Mansion. Oh, God have mercy. It is the most amazing. I try to go to Disney World as often as I can, you know, which is only about once every 2 years maybe. And, they have something called, Magic Hours, you know, where the park is only open to people who stay at their resort hotels.
Right.
And for me to be on the Haunted Mansion, you know, to be in that ride at 2 a.m. is just the coolest thing on earth. I absolutely love it. I can't get enough of it.
Well, you get the feel because it's so seamless. It's so well done. And even now, having been through it all the times that we have, you still get that feeling just in the back of your mind, wow, you know, this could almost be real.
It's awesome. I mean, the cheesecloth trick, you know, Pepper's Ghost, how they do the ghosts,
right,
and the dancing ghosts and that sort of thing. I mean, it's such a cool illusion, and it brings you back to those days, you know. Historically, you know, that's how they achieve those goals. It's really so simple, but they get those effects. It's so simple, but it looks so awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I could talk about Disney all night.
Oh, man, me too. Well, like I said, you know, I grew up with it. And then finally we moved to Ohio when I was going into high school. So now we were, you know, now Florida was closer. And we made it down to Disney World. I'm trying to think what year it actually opened. I think we made it the next year. So, you know, pretty close within the first year. And it's so much physically bigger, you know. There's just so much more to it. And so that's, and then of course all the additions over the years and adding the theme parks and whatnot, it's just become a universe. And of course, if you're in Orlando, you got to do Universal too, which I know you do. I see I get all their press stuff. So I see the pictures of you guys down there for the Halloween haunted nights. And, that's, it's amazing how just that whole haunted attraction industry has just exploded. And I don't think that's coincidental. I think the time frame that's been happening in, I think it absolutely parallels the growth in the paranormal in the media. I think they have reinforced each other. And while the one is in theory artificial, you know, and the other is not.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think they support each other. You know, they're kind of maybe sides of the same coin.
Absolutely. I mean, they're both fun. Who doesn't love a good haunted house? You know, real and you know, stage.
That's right. Just and isn't that funny that we don't even really have a different term? I know in the industry they don't call them haunted houses. They say haunted attractions or, you know, dark rides or stuff like that. But to people, you know, the populace, the world at large, we say haunted house, and that means that thing that's open now these days from, you know, mid September to early November, where people try to scare the hell out of you, and then you can say haunted house. That means literally a haunted house, and we don't have terms that really distinguish between them. I wonder what that means, if anything.
I don't know. I don't know, but something, perhaps. I think it's cool if there is a correlation between the two, you know. But
Well, it's some sort of cultural thing that, you know, if I pondered it too much, my brain would collapse. All right. Well, Steve, the hour, my goodness, how quickly it has come and gone. What a pleasure to speak with you. Super cool guy, really interesting, intelligent, fun, passionate, obviously committed, but level-headed, you know, passionate but not loopy.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. I appreciate it. It's quite nice of you to say. And thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm glad. I hope so. It really has been great for me, and I know Teresa will be very sad that she missed it. I'm guessing the Disney World hangover has got to her. She's got two young kids. No, not at all. Not after being there. Yeah. It's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. And so anyway, let's mention, very exciting, that Ghost Hunters returns for the second half of Season 9 tomorrow, Wednesday at 9 regular time, Eastern and Pacific, and we'll be down in, you guys will be down in Shreveport chasing perhaps the ghost of Elvis Presley. Not a bad way to kick off the second half of the season. And what's going on, and we will be there. And I get to return to live tweeting. I haven't live tweeted anything since you guys had your last new episode. So that will be very exciting and fun for me. I get to be sarcastic and marvel at the same time.
Okay. Well, I'll be live tweeting at the same time.
All right. So thanks so much, Steve. Really, really enjoyed it. It was great talking with you. Really loved meeting you. I've been... You're one of the few who I had never spoken to who I really wanted to. So this has really been very, very exciting for me. So thank you so much, and best of luck with the show and with all your personal endeavors. Nothing but the best.
Thank you. Very kind. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Take care now.
Have a good evening. And everyone out there, you too, thanks for listening to the show, America's Most Haunted. We are here every single, or virtually every, we miss a few a year, I suppose, every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, talking with all kinds of amazing people. I was just looking back through the list. We're actually getting a little bit closer now to our one-year anniversary. We started in July, and I was looking over the list. And, man, we have had amazing people almost every single week on the show. It's been pretty amazing. And we very much, of course, look forward to carrying on. And we have lots of great people lined up already coming up here. And very excited, as I said. Now I can say I have had a very interesting and lengthy conversation with the great Steve Gonsalves of Ghost Hunters. So good night, everybody. Have a great one.